This is VK6 Amateur Radio News with News West for Sunday the 19th of September 2021. Today is the history edition of News West, where we probe around in the past of amateur radio in Australia. It's quite instructive delving into our past because we see some of the same issues troubling amateurs that we see today. There's more, however. First, we have a silent key tribute. It's with much sadness that we report the passing of another amateur radio operator. Robert Anthony Wolfe, VK6NAD, passed on Thursday the 9th of September at the age of 47 years. Rob had a passion for rebuilding car motors, four-wheel driving, fishing, and radio communications, passions that worked well together. From Rob's early interest in CB radio, he progressed to the ranks of amateur radio by gaining his license about 5 years ago, and he enjoyed transmitting from Mount Dale Lookout, as many of us did. Rob was also very much involved in computer repairs and installations to the point where he started his own company called Nerds and also opened a branch in Sydney. He refused to commute by plane, so he drove across the country when needed in a late model VW Beetle, and of course it was decked out with all things amateur radio so that he could work the world, mobile or remote. Rob was taken from us far too early and will be remembered for his gentle and helpful manner by all that knew him. 7-3 Rob, VK6, November, Romeo Delta, Silent Key. Thanks to Milton VK6 Yankee Delta, who compiled this message for and on behalf of Rob's family.
A letter to the editor, Albany Advertiser, 1st of July 1935, about interference from amateur transmitters. Sir, I would be grateful if you would allow me space in your paper to enable me to get in touch with owners of receiving sets in Albany who are receiving interference which they believe to be emanating from my station. Interference of this nature may be picked up by the aerial or introduced into the receiver via the electric light mains if the receiver is wholly or partly run from this source. The latter is the medium by which the majority of interference is conveyed to the receiver, especially if the transmitter also obtains its power from the mains, unless proper precautions are taken. If the transmitter is adjacent to the receiver, it is also possible for the set to pick up interference through the wiring of the set, even though there is no aerial attached to it. Firstly, it may not be generally known that there is no electric light main laid on at the fort's power supply, for the transmitter here is drawn from my Delco, which delivers 32 volts DC, and by tapping the commutator, 26 volts AC approximately is obtained. I have constructed three transformers to which this AC fed is giving 450 volts filament voltages. These supplies are sufficient for transmitting and experimental work at this station. From this, it'll seem that the possibility of feedback through the electric light mains is nil. Therefore, the possibility of interference pickup by the mains wiring is practically nil. Secondly, a person who passes the PMG's examination for the amateur operator's proficiency certificate is given an experimental license. Every 6 months, a report is required by the PMG's department with details of the 6 months. It is not necessary to get on the air to prove the efficiency of the experiments. A dummy aerial can be used, as has been done at this station for the last 12 months or so. Occasionally, I transmit on 40 metres on a Sunday morning to contact with Perth and Fremantle amateurs and about midnight for foreign stations. The transmitter here is equipped with an impedance matching network, which is a modern and more efficient method of antenna coupling, as it practically suppresses all harmonics. May I also add that if a Morse key and buzzer or similar arrangement is used for practice purposes, interference may be caused unless suitable surge suppressors and or key thump filters are used. The continual thump and rasping note is easily identified in the set. Should anyone believe that they are receiving interference from my station, I would be very pleased if they would get in touch with me, as every license holder is entitled to listen in peace and comfort. Freak reception is, of course, always possible. Even so, I do not wish to add to the volume of noise receivable in Albany. The following method should prove the point in question. At a prearranged time, the set owner should listen in, and a friend of the set owner should be at this station to prove that the transmission actually takes place. The good-natured accusations of friends at various times have prompted me to write this letter, as it is evident that there is some interference in Albany that can possibly be suppressed, and if the trouble is here, I will eradicate it before continuing with further experimenting and transmitting. This letter is rather lengthy, but I wish to cover the ground sufficiently to clear up this point once and for all. Yours, John Hoare, VK6, Oscar Romeo.
From the Advocate, Burnie, Tasmania, Tuesday, the 11th of August, 1953. Amateur radio history made. Amateur radio history was made in Burnie at the weekend when the first contact between Australia and Easter Island was established, a distance of nearly 6,500 miles. Using simple homemade equipment, Dr. I.R. Pearson of Upper Burnie, a member of the Tasmanian branch of the Wireless Institute of Australia, exchanged messages with a party of Chilean scientists and amateur radio operators who were visiting Easter Island to study radio propagation from that isolated region. Easter Island is in the South Pacific, about 2,300 miles west of Chile. Interestingly, this amateur radio story was on page one of that newspaper. What would happen these days for amateur radio to rate a mention at all in a newspaper, let alone on the front page? Something to ponder.
From Western Australia, this is VK6 ARN, and you're listening to News West.
We here at WA Amateur Radio News have made the difficult decision to postpone Perth Tech until next year. We're disappointed, and we understand that there were a lot of WA amateurs who were looking forward to coming to Perth Tech. Once again, we blame COVID. However, there was another force in play. We could probably call it coincidence, however. We had what can only be described as a cascade of people declining the invitation to be presenters at Perth Tech. Everyone who declined had valid reasons for declining, and it was just that we had a cluster of them. Put it down to bad luck, I guess. We made provision to bring five presenters from outside of Western Australia, and we had several interested. However, they are either caught up in lockdowns or travel bans, and equally, they were wary of becoming stranded in Western Australia, with COVID responses being as fluid as they are on a daily basis. Being stranded in Western Australia is regarded as a fate worse than death for those living east of the 129th parallel, but seriously, they have homes, families and businesses, and can't afford to be stranded interstate. We didn't have enough Western Australian presenters put their hand up to make a day of it, hence our decision to postpone. That left us with another problem. As you know, we are conducting a raffle to fund Perth Tech, and because we've already sold tickets, we're committed to continuing with ticket sales and to conducting a draw of the raffle on Saturday the 23rd of October at 1 p.m. So here's the plan. We'll conduct the WA Amateur Radio News Annual General Meeting on Saturday the 23rd of October at 11 a.m. We'll put on lunch and then draw the raffle at 1 p.m. We'll utilise the same venue at Gidgeganup and scale down the booking to one room. We'll provide lunch, and this one's on us. But you do need to RSVP. Now, anyone's welcome. However, you do need to tell us that you're coming so that we know how small to make the sandwiches. Those who have already booked for Perth Tech, thank you, and we'll organise refunds. We'll email you individually for your bank details for direct deposit, rather than organise a refund via Try Booking and your plastic card, which will incur both of us more fees. Please continue to purchase tickets in the raffle, and the proceeds will be set aside for Perth Tech in 2022, or whenever the heck it does happen.
There are many important parts that make up a repeater site, and not just a repeater site, but a repeater site that works well, is reliable, and extracts the most out of the site in terms of coverage and ingenuity. Caterby was one such site. It was designed to be as good as it could be. A sensitive non-desensing receiver connected to a transmitter that was on frequency and repeated the audio to sound like it was being received. It could even improve the audio. And all this was done at a time when the availability of equipment was not what it is today. Of all the difficult parts that make up a repeater, finding affordable equipment was the most difficult part way back in the 1980s. The first repeater at Caterby was a cut-in-half ICOM IC22A. WAG had used a variety of equipment way back from the Pi F60 base station, part valve, part transistor, to the VHF group's all-transistor FM transceiver. The ICOM IC22A was the first fairly cheap, by 1970s prices, small and lightweight 2-meter FM transceiver. The cost in the mid-1970s was $200, which is $1,455 in today's money. It came with three crystal lock channels. Extra channels were $9 a pair, which is $65. Yes, to add another channel cost $65 in today's money. With little equipment available for WAG to make repeaters, the idea was floated. Can an IC22A be cut in half to make a repeater? Two IC22As could have been used, but at twice the cost. The IC22A had a good record of working well as a mobile and base station. Would it be suitable as a repeater? Equipment specifications for a repeater are very high. A receiver that does not easily overload in the presence of a strong transmission, very close in frequency, and a transmitter that has low, close in frequency-wise noise. The frequency separation on 2 meters is just 600 kHz, some 0.4% away. The cutting up of the IC22A circuit board was debated at meetings, while the circuit board was examined in detail to see if it was possible. The circuit board was single layer and had to be to even consider slicing the board in half. Yes, it looked like it was possible, and WAG decided to cut one in half. Turned out to be easier than expected. The now separated IC22A was housed in an RF-tight, double-sided printed circuit box. One for the receiver, one for the transmitter, and one for the control board. These were custom-made by WAG. Each compartment was well RF screened from each other, with all wiring between compartments going through 1000 picofarad RF feed-through capacitors. The lids were also cut from printed circuit board and screwed to the tops with many screws. Separate power regulators for the receiver, transmitter and control board were added, along with a front speaker, mute and volume control. Also added was an audio AGC circuit board that reduced the audio level variations between users. The audio often sound better than the original. The transmitter was modified to be direct FM modulated. The IC22A uses phased modulation, which does have relatively high audio distortion, around 10%, and very poor low frequency response. Okay for its use, but not in a repeater. The distortion and low frequency is in effect double when retransmitting through a repeater, if it uses phase modulation. The IC22A was converted to FM modulation by directly modulating the transmit crystal using a varactor diode. This also allowed CTCSS to be encoded to the transmission, not possible with phase modulation, because the CTCSS level fed to the phase modulator has to be high to produce the low-frequency CTCSS tones, and resulting distortion produces harmonics that are heard in the repeater's audio. The front paddle had a total of 19 LEDs to monitor many functions of the repeater, 12 of which were used and the remainder spare for whatever may be useful in the future. The day of installation was hot, as this took place in the summer of 1984. Most amateurs who were on 2 meters FM were eager to receive their first contact via the Caterby repeater. 40 and 80 meters were used on the drive to the site and at the site to keep amateurs informed of switch-on. The repeater was installed along with a duplexer. The most important desensing tests were done and the repeater had no desensing from the transmitter. Desensing is the most difficult problem to solve with a repeater. Complete understanding of the issue and good engineering, along with an easy way to check on site for desensing, is essential. The repeater had receiver audio from the front speaker, along with a transmit on-off switch. With the repeater connected to a duplexer and the antenna, and the repeater's transmitter switched off, a weak signal was coupled into the receiver. This could be from a signal generator or even a handheld on low power with no antenna attached. If on turning on the transmitter, no change in the received noise level from the speakers of the repeater is noticed, then there is no desensing. An increase in noise, then desensing is occurring. VK6RCT passed all tests and switch on in the mid-afternoon was accomplished. The dry Eastleigh was finally weakening but still made propagation poor, with few stations in Perth being able to access the repeater. However, from the hilltop at the site, we could see the Westerlee heading our way, and when the wind changed direction, stations started to access the repeater. By late afternoon, there was many contacts via the repeater as we left to drive back to Perth, but first to the Caddaby Roadhouse for an ice cold Coke and a hot dog. With a handheld on the outside table, we listened to the amateur contacts through Caddaby and briefly joined in on a few. This was the icing on the cake. Caddaby was finally on air. All the design, construction and travel had paid off. VK6RCT was WAAG's most northern repeater. Part 4 of the Caddaby story is some of the experiments tried from the site. For example, adding a very low noise preamp to a trial packet station, which had two 7-element Yagis pointing at Geraldton. 7.3 is from Will, VK6UU.
Solar Cycle 25 is now showing signs of life. What happens on our sun affects radio propagation around the world. Solar indices are a measure of activity on the sun. These indices can be used by amateur radio operators to get a sense of how radio signals will propagate globally and when to expect radio blackouts. Sites like Solar Ham give a good insight into the sun's current activity, presenting easy-to-consume solar weather. But what does it mean? What's good for radio and what's not? The solar cycle is a roughly 11-year periodic change in the sun's sunspot activity, measured by the variation in the number of sunspots observed. The sun just ended its 24th solar cycle in 2020 and is now entering solar cycle 25. Read more about the solar flux index, the A and K indices, and more at the VK3 Foxtrot Sierra website. The link was sent to the WA Hams email list this morning.
This is VK6 Amateur Radio News, and you're listening to News West. It appears that Mark has had an offer or two to sort out the news broadcasts for when he shoots off on a couple of weeks' break in October. Mark's having a conversation with the personal persons involved, so it looks like we're onto it. So I can change the News West DEFCON status from becoming cross to somewhat relieved. Now, concerning the WA Amateur Radio News Annual General Meeting, just to make sure we haven't missed anyone, if you consider yourself a member of WA Amateur Radio News and you haven't received notice of the AGM by Monday, that's tomorrow, please send an email to secretary@vk6.net and we'll make sure you're included. secretary@vk6.net, got it? Likewise, if you're not a member of WA Amateur Radio News but would like to be, send us an email and we'll consider your request at a committee meeting as required in the rules. And all newcomers are welcome. And the other thing about the AGM, you don't have to be a member or even intend to be a member. If you want to come as a guest, just let us know that you're coming.
This item is from the Brisbane Courier on Thursday the 30th of May 1929 with the heading Amateur Radio Cooperation. Sir, we have again, in this morning's news, further evidence of all the too frequent ignoring of the amateur radio experimenters' ever-available help in the organisation of the search flight of the Qantas plane Atlanta, and the plane's radio signals will be officially observed by one lone receiving station. No matter how efficient that station may be, accidents occur, and surely a reliable 24-hour watch daily kept by our leading amateur transmitting stations with the added efficiency of their check logs would considerably add to the success of the organisation, particularly as it cost nothing. It was an American amateur who observed the Californian Honolulu flights and listened to the tragic end of the plane, Dulles Spirit, which fell into the sea and was lost. Coming near home, we remember that Brisbane and Mareeba were kept in reliable telegraphic communication by amateur radio operators during the period immediately following the Mareeba cyclone. And only last month, amateur radio operators kept open the telegraphic service between Tasmania and Victoria with their private sets when the storms had wrecked the public utilities. While this letter is purely personal in view, I know that any application for assistance to the officials of the Wireless Institute of Australia, Queensland Division, for similar ventures to that of the Atlanta, will be met with 100% support, and that it will be found that amateur operators will put up a performance that will readily explain our just-fled unhappiness at being consistently ignored in these matters, with the accompanying implied indignity of inefficiency and muddling that it must leave in the minds of the public, I am. Signed by Russell F. Roberts, Amateur Radio, VK4FN, West End, May 23rd, 1929.
On HF, VHF and UHF, via the VK6 linked repeater network, and online, this is News West from VK6 ARN.
Next week, we aim our News West episode at new amateurs. And one of the ways we do this is to congratulate those who have gained a new licence and those who have upgraded to another level. Having done all the congratulating, we move on to giving information and telling stories that could prove useful to newcomers to our hobby. In fact, there may even be something of use to those who are not so new to the hobby. Now here's where you can come in. How about sharing your story about entering the hobby? What was it like for you? Was there something that you learned along the way that perhaps you would like to share? Or do you simply have a good yarn to tell? Old hand or new, your story will prove interesting to others, so how about it? 2 to 3 minutes worth is plenty of time for you to tell your tale. Send your story, either text or recording, as email attachments to newswest@vk6.net.
Good morning, yes, it's me again, Roy, VK6 X-Ray Victor, with this week's helpline for the 19th of September 2021. And this morning I have a help wanted from Mac, VK6 Mike. Mike, has anyone got an instruction book for the AWA test set, the AWA VHF UHF FM radio test set model A for Alpha 412? Anyone with an instruction manual for the AWA FM UHF and VHF test set model Alpha 412, please contact Mac on his mobile 0417 977 765, 0417 977 765, or the email address is vk6mike@iinet.net.au, vk6mike@iinet.net.alphauniform. Next item, does anyone have a Papa Romeo Charlie 25 or a Papa Romeo Charlie 77 they'd like to part with? Graham, VK4, Bravo, Bravo, from our news desk in the National News Desk in Queensland. We'd like to hear from you if you can help him. He's looking for one for nostalgic purposes only. That's VK4, Bravo, Bravo. His email address is nationalnews@wia.org.au. That's for a military radio, Papa Romeo Charlie 25 or Papa Romeo Charlie 77. Thank you. And Neil, our intrepid broadcaster at 7 o'clock in the morning on 3620, is still looking for a Kenwood TS830, if you can help him. He's a Kenwood tragic and he likes to collect Kenwood gear, old antique Kenwood. Not so much antique, but fossilised anyway. Kenwood520@hotmail.com is his email address. If you can help him with a TS830 by Kenwood, his email address again, kenwood520@hotmail.com. Next item comes from Kai, VK6. Not sure of the rest, but he has for sale this morning a Alpha Echo Alpha PK232 MBX, a packet radio device, an AEA PK Papa Kilo 232 Mike Bravo X-ray. It's in good working order. It has a 3.5-inch floppy disk manual and cables, etc. Hardware is free, but to buy or to pay for the postage from Broome. So it's actually a freebie if you like to pay the postage. It's a packet radio device free from Kai up in Broome. And Kai also has a Cisco, spelt Charlie India Sierra Charlie Oscar, a Cisco 860 Victor Alpha Echo Dash W router, brand new, only turned on once, comes with a box and a power cable. $200 is the asking price, or nearest offer, plus postage from Broome. If you'd like to contact Kai for any of those items, please do so. You can contact Kai on his email address, which is victorkilo6kilosierrajuliet@westnet.com.au/uniform. victorkilo6kilosierrajuliet@westnet.com.au. The next group of items comes from Greg, VK6 Echo Delta. Greg has a Fox Tango 107 mic HF transceiver, 160 meters, comes with a Yankee Mic 3.8 desk microphone, a Fox Victor 107 external VFO, handbooks and DC leads, all in near perfect condition, asking only $450 or nearest offer for the lot. Also has a Kenwood Tango Romeo 9000, 2 meter all mode transceiver, comes with mounting bracket and handbook, good condition, $250 or nearest offer. There's also a Kenwood Tango Sierra 811 Bravo, 70 centimeter all mode transceiver, comes with handbook, AC/DC leads, good condition, $350 or nearest offer. And you can contact Greg on his mobile phone 0417 900 874, or email to Golf Romeo Echo Golf Golf Alpha Romeo Romeo Alpha Tango Tango at westnet.com.au. Too quick, I'll say it again. Golf Romeo Echo Double G A Double R A T T at westnet.com.au. Hope you got it that time. And Gus, VK6 Whiskey Bravo, has a mother of all rotators. It's a big boy's rotator. It's a Pro Sistel, whatever that means, and it will probably rotate your shack if you screwed the rest of the world down. Gus also has a Kenwood Tango Sierra 2000. That's a HF, VHF, UHF all-mode transceiver. For any further details, please contact Gus, VK6 Whiskey Bravo. His phone number 0407-030592. 0407-030592, or email to vk6whiskeybravo@yahoo.com. victorkilo6whiskeybravo@yahoo.com. And that's me for this week. If you have any items for next week, please contact me. Email address victorkilo6xrayvictor@bigpond.com, same as usual. VK6XRayVictor@bigpond.com. Until next week, have a good time, and looking forward to the grand final. No, yes, well, whatever. This is VK6XV73.
Thanks for listening, and thanks to the team today, guest presenter Will VK6UU, and the studio team Roy, Mike, Jeff, and Andrew, who served up the cream puffs and red wine in the green room. Thanks to the broadcast team. And that's it from us, so stick around for callbacks and get into a week of being on air and making a noise.